Okay, so we're going to try to cover a lot, but in a within the hour, I guess. This is like the source sheets that we prepared. It's basically I tried to take the highlights of this. There's this book called The Sanctity of Shabbos. So we did like 80 pages in three source sheets. So I'm going to try to get the goal. What we're going to try to go through tonight are number one, the reasons. Very briefly, the reasons for Amir Lenachri. That we're talking about the what you can tell a non-Jew to do on Shabbos, what you can't. The reasons. The second issue we're going to talk about, are you allowed to derive benefit from work that was done by a non-Jew? The third, we're going to talk about the types of speech that are forbidden. In other words, hinting, when is hinting permitted? And then we're going to talk about exceptions to this prohibition. Hopefully, as you've gone through your sources, that you've seen that it's not true that you always have to hint if you want a non-Jew to do something. There are certain things that hinting helps and certain things you don't even need to hint. And then we'll talk about contractors and we'll talk about mail and packages. Okay, we'll try to go through everything. Okay, so they're basically three different approaches, right? We saw in the first source sheet, we have the Rambam, we had Rashi, and I gave you the Hagos Maimonios, but there are other Rishonim who say that. The Rambam is probably not the most popular position in terms of the general positions, the general reasons for Amir Lenachri. What does the Rambam say? Why is Amir Lenachri forbidden?
I don't want to make Shabbat light in the eyes of...
Right, And we don't want Shabbos to be taken lightly. If you feel that you can have someone who's not Jewish do all your work, so you're going to take Shabbos lightly. The two probably, I think, more popular reasons are the other two reasons, which are what's called Dabir Davar, forbidden speech. That's a Rashi says he cites a pasuk from Yeshayahu. This is Rashi in Avodah Zarah, Daf Tezvav Amud Aleph. That was the second source, where he cites a verse in Yeshayahu, Mimtzo Chefzcha V'Dabir Davar. There's certain types of speech that you should speak on Shabbos. Just like, for example, we say that you're not allowed to on Shabbos say, I'm going to do this malacha, I'm not going to drive a car Saturday night. Or you can say, well, maybe I'll see you Saturday night some other place, but you're not supposed to mention actually doing a malacha. But that's not a topic now. There are certain ways that we're supposed to speak on Shabbos. So some view the whole prohibition of Amir Lenachri, that we're not supposed to tell a non-Jew to do work, that's under the category of V'Dabar Davar, it's forbidden speech. And a third possibility is that it's called Shlichus, he is your agent. If the non-Jew does work for you, he is acting on your behalf, and therefore it's as if you did it. So what might be an interesting difference? Let's work with the second and third possibility. What's the difference if the reason is because it's forbidden speech, or if it's because the non-Jew is your agent? What might the reason be? Do you think that was my question? I had an open question.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
What's the difference if the reason was only
then the way you say it matters.
So that's interesting. So you're saying there was Dabar Davar, right. So that's interesting. So in other words, maybe if you hint it, if you do it indirectly, I hadn't thought of that. That's interesting. You say maybe if you hint it, so maybe that might not be considered forbidden speech. Right. I have to think about that. See if that comes out. I want to look into that. It's good. Another possibility is when you say it. In other words, let's say on Friday you say, you tell the non-Jew on Friday, I want you to do this for me on Shabbos. So you're not doing any forbidden speech because you're telling it to him on Friday, but he is your agent. He's doing, when he does the action on Shabbos, he's doing it for you. So if the only prohibition is forbidden speech, you should be allowed to say anything on Friday, no matter when he does it. And conversely, if, let's say you tell a non-Jew on Shabbos, I want you to do this for me on Sunday, so it's a Dabir Davar problem, because it's forbidden speech on Shabbos, but when he's doing it on Sunday. So we hold of all these reasons. That's why it's an issue about saying something to a non-Jew on Shabbos for him to do malacha on Shabbos, whether you're telling him on Friday to do malacha on Shabbos, whether you're telling him on Shabbos to malacha after Shabbos. But these are some of the reasons for Amir Lenachri. Now, we tend to think that whenever we're asking ourselves, this question of Amir Lenachri, can you tell a non-Jew to do something? We have to ask ourselves two different things. Number one is, are you allowed to tell him to do a certain action? And number two, can you derive benefit from this action? Because sometimes a non-Jew can do something for you, and you didn't violate Amir al-Nachri. He did something, you didn't even ask him. But there's still a prohibition of getting Hanag, deriving benefit. What's the reason? What's the reason that you saw? I saw you the Tosfos in Beitza, Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis, where he said that the reason why you can't derive benefit from a non-Jew...
Then you might tell them.
Because you might tell them, right. I was concerned that you might tell them. Right. In other words, Atam Shema Yomar Ladachri Lechu Lakot with it in this particular example of collecting. But so you can't derive benefit. So what, even in a time when you're allowed a hint to a non-Jew to do something, so you can't benefit. So we have to see how that worked.
Yeah, the Jews are in the room. I read that.
So we'll get there. So step by step. So the first point is. I will try to put some of these concepts together. So there are three different types of benefit, right? In other words, there's what we call a direct benefit, an indirect benefit, and an additional benefit. That what's an example of a direct benefit? Do you remember that? It's a while back. It was like it was in Source 6, the Ran in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph Abed Aleph. So he said, in action. So in action is there's a difference if a non-Jew turns on a flame versus turns off a flame. If a non-Jew turns on a light for you or he turns off the light,
one's producing, one's removing.
In other words, a direct benefit if someone is turning on a light, so they're providing. You have a dark room and they turn on a light for you. That's a direct benefit. If, for example. You can't sleep, so they are, and the light is, they're removing something which hinders you from sleeping. So that, when they're removing, they're not creating, I mean, you can talk semantics, you know, they're creating darkness, they're creating, but they're not really, they're removing light, and that is providing a benefit, but it's indirect. That's how Halacha understands that. In other words, when they're turning on a light, so they're creating a benefit. Here, the benefit, they're not producing something. His language here is, siluk davar hezek. That's the last three words of the Ran, or it's meyuchas the Ran, and this is source 6, Shabbos, daf kufchaf aleph abed aleph, where he is removing something that is harmful. That's an important distinction in halacha. Turning on a light is you're adding a benefit. Turning off a light, extinguishing a flame, you're removing something which hinders, which is harmful to you in this instance. Okay? So that's the difference between a direct and an indirect benefit. And then there was, in Source 7, the Mishnah Berurah in Simon Shin Zayin, Sif Katan Ayin Vav, where he says that if there is, he talks about where you could read, if you could read under pressing circumstances, you have a dimly lit room. So then, you would allow to benefit from the non-Jew turning on a light for you.
Improving it.
Because that's called an additional benefit.
But you don't need it.
Right. It's hard to know exactly, you know, where you draw the line with this. But this is the example is, again, where you couldn't read at all. And what does it mean you can't read at all? I'm sure there's some gray areas where there's room to dispute. But sometimes you can have that, like if you're, let's say, right, if you're in the dining room, and your dining room light goes off, but there is some side light, so you can still see the food. But for the non-Jew to turn on the light there, that would be an example where they're providing additional light. If no lights are on, so that would be a direct benefit. If you want to go to sleep, that's an indirect benefit. So, in terms of benefiting from the malacha, we're going to put this together with hinting. This category. You put that together with the rules related to hinting.
So even though the action is the same, meaning...
What do you mean the action is the same?
Well, how do we create more light? They're lighting another candle.
Right, so that's a separate. That's an additional benefit. It has to be a direct benefit that you couldn't do whatever you wanted to do. Even the language of the Mishnah Berurah is al pi adchak. You can't even under press, with difficulty, you can't read. An additional benefit is where right now I could read with difficulty, but I want to read with ease. So by turning God to light, that is an additional benefit.
Even though they're doing the same thing.
Correct.
What is the practical, like, if, let's say we're sitting and we're, you know, having Shabbos meal, all the lights go out, and a non-Jew comes in and turns on the light, do we have to leave the room? Like, what does that mean that we can't derive benefit from?
So you might. I mean, well, actually, we're going to talk about that. But you might, if it depends why he's doing that. It might be, you know,
if he's doing it for his own benefit.
So that's the question. If doing for his own benefit.
Why would he be doing it for his own benefit?
Right.
If he's coming in, he has to turn it
right.
I mean, that's the what I would like to get out. Not that I don't have anybody helping me on Shabbos per se, but like you get stuck. The oven light is on. The refrigerator light is on.
So we're gonna get okay. Okay. We're gonna try. Let's go step through step. Let's go. If you have any questions, I'm gonna try to cover these questions. If there's something that's not clear from what I'm actually saying specifically, then you know feel free to ask. If it's like a hypothetical that we haven't covered yet, just hold off. I think I'm gonna try to cover it all, hopefully. So the step one would be that assuming that your speech to the non-Jew was permitted, or you didn't say anything, assuming that, then you could benefit from an indirect benefit or an additional benefit, but you cannot benefit from a direct benefit. I'm gonna talk about hinting, and then we're gonna put it together. Okay, so related to Yocheved, your question about if it's the majority or not majority. So that is the issue there is if the non-Jew is doing something for himself, he turns on a light for himself, then you can derive benefit from it. He's not doing it for you. Okay, the scenario that you gave where he's coming into your room and he turns it on, that's obviously he's doing it for you. But in reality, if he's turning on a light for himself, if sometimes they do a trick a little bit, you could tell the non-Jew, for example, there's something I left in this room, can you find it? And they actually have in mind, I mean, obviously it's a housekeeper, let's say. Mm-hmm. So you tell the housekeepers, they said, I can't find this, do you mind looking for this thing? And they turn on the light, and they're truthfully, it's not like a wink, wink, you know, look for this thing. But if they're honestly turning on the light because they're looking for an item, then they did it for themselves. And then you could tell them, don't turn it off. Now you could tell that, you don't have to tell, you could tell them not to do a malacha, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's just an idea sometimes. You know, you tell them, I can't find something, and they have to really honestly believe that they're looking for the item. And then once they turn on the light, then you say, you know, don't turn it off, okay? If you do this multiple times, then obviously they understand it. That's not good. It doesn't work.
What if they ask you, can I turn on the light?
Right, so we'll get to that when we get to the speech. We'll talk about hinting.
What do you do if the light in the refrigerator, the tape came off?
Yeah, we'll get to talk about that. That's good. We'll get to that. I'm sorry. No, it's a good question.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to get to practical. I've got to get to the nitty-gritty, but we have to understand, we have to get the concepts, then we'll see how it plays out. So let's talk about hinting, right? So we're talking about hinting. So the basic way to understand the hinting... So first, I did bring you, I think, oh, I'm sorry. So before we get to the benefit, so there's a difference between if a non-Jew, I think we saw this in some of the sources, there's a difference if a non-Jew turns on a light for himself, then everyone could benefit from it, versus if there's something where he would do more actions, more activity for you. What's called Shema Yarbe Bishvilo, cooking. Let's say he cooks some hot water, when Alicia, she makes hot water, so you're not, if she makes hot water for herself on Shabbos morning, so you're not allowed to use the hot water for coffee. You're not allowed to. Even if she only made it for herself, why? Because she may do it. So first of all, she will. I mean, if she sees that everyone wants it, she's going to do it. But that's the concern. Shema, it's in Hebrew, Shema Yarbe Bishvilo, because maybe she will, in the future, she will make more for other people. So therefore, what it's a light. So you're not going to do. You're not doing any. It's called ner le'echad, ner le'mea, a light for one, a light for 100. There's no difference to how many people are there. When you flip on the switch, you're not going to do any, we're not considering you can do any additional malacha, any additional work for anyone else. However, when it comes to, let's say, cooking, for example, so for you to benefit from the hot water, so then, we're concerned that they're going to, make more hot water for you in the future. Now, a question comes up. So let's say the non-Jew is turning on the light for the people in the room. So there you go by majority. I think we saw that in some of the sources here, that, right? If the non-Jew is turning on the light for a bunch of people, if the majority are non-Jews, then he did it for non-Jews. If the majority are Jews, then he did it for Jews. And you can't benefit from it.
But if he's benefiting from it,
it's very much, 100%. Doesn't matter. 100%. If you do it for yourself, it doesn't make a difference. Yeah.
But also, say the light got switched off in shul, and
there's a different reason why. There's a different reason. There's a different reason why we're allowed to do it in shul, which I'll get to. Okay.
Also, if it's the only room there's no lights anywhere else because you were planning on eating in the dining room and you need to eat in the dining room and it's Shabbos, they're allowed to do it because you're in the dark and you need to eat your food for Shabbos.
Right, so we'll see what happens if they do a balacha for you. Okay, we'll get to that. There's definitely ground if you have no other place to eat. So that might be grounds to do that, probably for Oneg Shabbos, if it's correct. But now you should try to stop him from turning on the light. There's a debate between the Starkei and Rabbi Willer. Rabbi Willer is strict on the following case, and the Starkei is lenient on the following case. So are you allowed to have? I can tell you both sides. You could pick your postek, I guess. I mean, again, I usually follow by Rabbi Willig, but again, the Starkei is lenient on this. But so, the question is, can you, if in the hotel, can you have the hot water on Shabbos and the coffee? So the Starkei says, the Starkei says yes. Okay, Rabbi Willig says no. The Starkei argues. He's saying they're making coffee. The majority of the people are. Non-Jewish a hotel like where they're non-Jews. So no, the Starkei will even say that if you go to a Jewish program, then certainly not. They're not supposed to do that. But let's say you go to a regular hotel or a hotel where there's no Jewish program, there's no kosher program. The majority of people are non-Jews, and you're going to say, look, you make it for the majority of the people. So then the majority of the people are not Jewish, and therefore therefore we look at it as you made it for a non-Jew, and therefore you could derive benefit from it. But Rabbi Willig says, no, that's true when it comes to the principle of ner le'echad, ner le'meah. If you turn on one light, so there you go by the majority. But he says, each additional person who the person is making coffee for, there's a concern that they're making extra coffee for you. If they know you're going to take the hot water, they're concerned. So that's a debate between the Starkei and Rabbi Willig. I'm sure there are other poskim, but when I looked into this issue, Starkei's leader, Rabbi Willig, is strict about the coffee at the hotel.
You're talking about actual brewing in a commercial type of machine.
I'm not
putting in instant crystals.
I'm talking about if they have hot water in the lobby. If there's like hot water in the lobby, they have an urn in the hotel lobby. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so if they're taking it from an urn, that the light in the kitchen is always on because commercial things are hardly ever off.
Yeah.
Right? The light on those commercial machines for hot water are always on.
No, but
they're probably adding water on Shabbos. Are they adding water on Shabbos?
I don't know.
I don't know the facts. So I assume they're adding water. That's an interesting debate. Let's talk about hitting. Okay? So this is the way you hit. The key to hitting is you describe the situation. That's the key. You describe the situation. And if you answer yes to a question, should I do this? You're really saying, yes, I would like you to do this. So you mean I should turn on the light? Yes. So what you're really saying is, yes, I want you to do that. The way that hitting works, according to, is that you describe the situation. What you say is the following, you know what, it's, I can't sleep in this room because of, I can't sleep in this room because of the light here. And so you don't mention, you don't ask them, and you don't mention the malacha. You know, those are the two key things. You don't ask them to do anything, and you don't mention the malacha itself.
Even though it's removing?
But, wait. So again, so now I'm going to give you the example. So your light's on, the light's on in your room, right? You want the non-Jew to turn off the light. So again, so number one is you have to be able to hint it. The way you hint it halakhically appropriately is to describe the situation. You say that it's very bright in here and I cannot sleep. You're not asking them to do anything and you're not mentioning the malacha. And then they're going to say, so what exactly do you want me to do? You can even say, I can't tell you. I observe the Shabbos. I can't tell you what to do, but let me describe the situation. My light's on and I can't sleep. It's very bright in here. They're like, oh, you want me to turn off the light? I can't tell you. But then you repeat it again and again until they finally, trust me, it works. Okay? So you cannot say yes. If they ask you, can I turn on the light? You can even say, I'm not allowed to tell you what to do, but I'm describing you the situation.
It's the same thing if you forgot the oven timer is beeping. You forgot to turn that off. Could you say, I can't sleep because it's so noisy?
You can't sleep because it's noisy, and then they are... Same idea, yeah. So that would be...
Do you want me to turn off the timer?
Right, so you say, I can't tell you what to do.
I can't. They say that clarifying what you want them
right,
to
do. Right, so I can't. And so, okay. So that is an indirect bet. So that's an example where you're putting together these two different halachos that we learned. Number one, how to hint... And number two, but it only works for an indirect benefit or additional benefit. If you want to say, it's dark in this room and I can't see, so again, that would be, legally, that would work in terms of hinting, but you would not be allowed to benefit from that because that's a direct benefit. So this hinting, you know, this hinting idea that people hear, you can't say directly, but you can only hint, that only works for an indirect benefit or an additional benefit. We're going to discuss examples where you could even tell the non-Jew directly. But these two pieces really fit together in terms of an indirect benefit or plus an additional benefit together with hinting. Yeah.
Wait, one second.
I'm not saying that, but if it doesn't fit into one of these exceptions, or if it's an additional benefit, but if it's dimly lit, yeah. Sorry.
Let's say we're not talking about lights now. Let's say. It's really freezing in here.
It's a separate. That's going to come into a separate exception.
Okay.
We're going to get to a separate exception.
The example that you gave before about them turning on a light because they need to find something, that you can hint. It's a direct benefit they benefit from it. It's okay.
You can even tell them directly. You can say, can you please find... You're not even telling them to do a malacha. You're telling them, can you please find, can you just help me out? I'm busy now. Can you find this piece of jewelry that I left in my room over there? You know where it is because you're...
But that's hinting. I mean, it's not hinting.
No, you're telling them
to do something because you want them to do something else.
Yeah, you're want them to do something that is that is permitted. You're asking them to do something that's permitted. It's up to them whether they want to turn on the light or not. You're not telling them to turn on the light at all.
The thing that you're asking them to.
Right. The difference is in that case, they actually believe that you want that piece of jewelry as opposed to here where you're describing it. They know that you want them to do a malacha.
Right.
That's the difference. There's the issue of where you say, can you get this piece of jewelry in my room? They're performing a malacha, but their intent is to simply, that's just aiding them in fulfilling your desire to do something which is totally permitted.
But you can do that in the hope that then you're going to derive direct benefit from something that they do that's a malacha.
That's because they're doing it for their benefit. Right. They're turning the light for their benefit. No. They're turning on a light. If they're turning on a light because they want to find, an object for you, that's up to them. When I spoke about the halachos of hotels, go to hotels. So I mentioned you know, different issues, because they open the door for you. So some people come up with something where they say, like, there's an issue. Yeah, is it? Sure. They say, you know what? I have a gift for you if you want to. I have a gift. No, seriously. Some people leave like as a tip for them, a gift, like leave some food as a tip. You know, I left it for you. You know, if they really believe they're coming to room to get a tip, then that's an angle.
So they can remember to leave a tip, but they can't remember to leave the light on to get the things that they need.
No, I'm talking about open the door with the car key. But in any case, so that's the hinting, indirect. For hinting works for indirect benefit. There is, by the way, there's a difference between Shabbos and I brought this one of these sources for you as well, that there is a difference. Asking before Shabbos. So we said that you could do it before Shabbos. You could say before Shabbos, why didn't you do this to me last Shabbos? So you are allowed a hint on Friday for him to do something on Shabbos. But I don't know how practical that is. I couldn't think of the good examples for that.
Turn off your oven if you want to leave it
on. Yeah, okay, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Why didn't you turn off my oven last Shabbos or something like that? Right. Okay, you could do that on Friday.
What if they don't get it, then your oven stays
on? Okay, so that's an issue. Okay, so now we are.
To get into the hotel door.
Yeah.
Right? That is considered, that's not a direct action.
So again, that is a direct action. All I'm saying is that there are those who hold, and we're going to talk about this, that specifically, that when I spoke about this last in the summer, I mentioned that using the key card is an issur d'rabbanan, and shvus to shvus, you could tell a non-Jew to set aside a rabbinic prohibition if there's a need. So the question is there a need for you to go away and stay at a hotel? So that's a debate. There's a debate about that. If you're stuck there, so with some people, as I mentioned, that some people made a suggestion that you could leave a tip for the non-Jew in your hotel room and say, you know what, I left something for you, please, it's my honor for you to take it, and then they're opening the key for their own benefit, and then you quickly make sure you follow along.
But like,
what? No, not money, no, food, no, food, yeah, food, right, yeah, whatever. Okay, so let's talk about, so first of all, it could be creepy. It could be a little. Okay.
You could just say to a person in the hotel, let's say you're staying there for 2 weeks.
You can say, let the bar wide for you, but it's creepy. But they're not. Well, okay, I don't.
But
want
you
to
can't say to somebody. You can't say to somebody, why didn't you open the door for me? Let's say you're staying in the hotel 2 weeks in a row. You could say, oh, why didn't you open the door for me when I went up the stairs last week? And then they'll know, like, what are the conditions to be able to say, why didn't you do it last time? You could do that
right,
for everything.
Right. So the truth is, there's a Rosh who says that when you do something, some hold like this, that if you do something repeatedly, that it's no longer the status of a hint. So it might work once.
Yeah.
But it no longer has the status of a hint anymore.
But you could do it for anything. You could do it for any.
That's what it seems.
If you go to a hotel where they know that these are all Shabbos observers, right, and there's always a consistent key problem, they know ahead of time to do, especially like on Pesach.
Right.
You know ahead of time,
so they're different.
Have to be opening the door.
So they're different.
My babysitter knows that if I start talking in a weird way,
yeah,
she's like, oh, you're doing that thing because, like, you want me to do that thing.
No.
Like,
right.
Anymore.
So again, if it's once, so I'll give you an example for this. If it's like once in a blue moon where you're like, oh my gosh, I left my light on, and you have to turn it off. So that's, you know, once in a blue moon. There are those poskim who hold, and we had this sometimes, where, let's say at Yom Tov, let's say to turn off the gas for the barbecue. So Willie told us, he said that you could tell them once, but after that, if you're stuck, and like, you can't plan on that, if it's routine, then that becomes not hit.
It's never routine, but meaning it's happened enough times that, like, if I say, like, oh, you know, it's so dark in here. She'll be like, oh, you're doing that thing where, like, you want me to turn on the light.
No, so I think that's...
Like, saying it in, like, a weird way.
You're right. No, so, no.
I can't tell you.
No, right. No, no, no. So I... So I
It sounds like it's a long-standing relationship.
Right. No, as long as it's not a routine planned thing, that's the point.
Okay. So meaning even if she knows that I'm being abusive,
in other words, it can't be like lechatchila, we're gonna play this game. If you get stuck, that's the point.
But when a hint is no longer actually a hint, it's just actually the words that I'm saying sound like they would be a hint for anyone else, but they are not actually a hint for the person I'm talking to. That's still okay.
That's okay. As long as it's not a something that's planned in advance.
Okay.
Does this all apply to 2-year-olds also?
I guess that, you know what? You should come on March 16th, Motzei Shabbos. We're going to talk about kids, but that's another topic. That's a different topic. I don't want to get to that. Okay.
I'm always so confused over the idea that we actually hire Shabbos guys.
So I'm going to explain what we do them for. We're going to see that, right? We use a Shabbos guy for shul to do certain things. So there are many things that you can do that you don't need to hint for. So some of the things that we mentioned. This is already now we're already in the second source sheet. So we mentioned that davar she'edo. This is in Shulchan Aruch or Chayim Siman Shin Zayin Seif Hey. So that's a very key halacha in Amir Ladachri. Davar she'edo balacha ve'edo asher lasos b'shabas elo mishum shvus. Something which is not a malacha, something which is only rabbinically forbidden, so you could tell a non-Jew to do it, it doesn't say to him, you could tell him directly, provided that it's either a mitzvah choli, or tzorech harbe, or mitzvah. Provided that it's a situation of not complete sickness, but some sickness or pain, if there's a great need, financial loss, a mitzvah, I brought another source that talked about for Kavod HaBrios as well, you could do it. So examples of this, where you could tell a non-Jew to do something directly. Let's say, for example, if you have someone has a rash, and you want to tell the non-Jew to purchase some kind of ointment from the drugstore. So by him purchasing it, he would be paying money. That is a rabbinic prohibition. But that's for tzar, for pain. Let's say it's a rash, so it's pain. Let's say you're not in a state of a chola, you're not a full-fledged sick person, but it's causing a lot of pain, so you would be allowed to tell him to do that. Let's say, for example, if somehow, I don't know, the outlet, your 2-year-old unplugged the freezer. No, it's not relevant. But someone unplugs the freezer, and if it gets unplugged, and if you don't plug it in, then all the meat will get spoiled. So plugging in would be an Isser Derabbanan, a rabbinic prohibition, and you would be allowed to set aside a rabbinic prohibition so that the meat doesn't get spoiled. Okay? Another example, if, let's say, you didn't light a yard site candle, okay, for those who are doing that. So for people, that's a big deal. If they don't have a yard site candle, that's like a major deal. And so that would seem to also,
isn't that just like a minhag?
For a lot of people, it's very meaningful. Is it a mitzvah, minhag? Right. Or maybe a better example is bringing a sitter if there's no eruv. Let's say there's no eruv to bring a sitter, but let's say it's only most places that we're in, it's not Doraisa. I don't know, let's say your clothes get ruined. Non-Jew to bring your clothes over or something where there's no Eruv. So if there's a rabbinic prohibition, if there's a need, if major financial loss, Kavod HaBrios, or Makom Choli Tzar, so they can set aside a rabbinic prohibition. Okay? Something that's practical. So it's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rabbah writes, I didn't have this in the sources, but the Rabbah writes that there is a rabbinic prohibition that's much more strict than other rabbinic prohibitions on Shabbos, that's Hachzara, to return food to the flame on Shabbos. Right? You can't take cold chicken from the fridge and put directly on the flame, you have to, whatever, non-adjustable hot plate, whatever. We talked about upside down black, whatever, upside down tray on top of black, whatever people use in order to do that. So, and the Rabbah writes that you can't even tell a non-Jew to do hachzara, which is interesting because hachzara is a rabbinic prohibition. You take cold chicken, right? Why can't we return food back to the stovetop? Because on the one hand, it gives off the appearance of cooking, and number two, because you might change the temperature. Those are the two different reasons called Shema Yechta B'Gecholim, or because Mechzik Mavash, it appears like cooking. So you would think that let's say you don't have any chicken, you want to have warm chicken on Shabbos day. You would think shvus to shvus, b'vako bit onik Shabbos, it should be permitted. The Ramah writes that it's forbidden. The Ber Halacha, that's the Mishnah Brewer, the comments the Ramah seems it's not. Maybe it is permitted in a pressing circumstance. So, but some disagree. The Rabbi Willick made an interesting point where he told me he said that in most instances, you know, if there's a blech that's covering it, which you can't put it directly on a blech, but he said it's not called hachzara, it's called hanacha. In other words, if you put a blech on top of it, there still is the appearance of cooking, but there's no concern you're going to change the temperature. We spoke about this, but in other words, when you put a blech on top of a flame, so then that's a sign that in the days of Chazal that was used to say separation. So we're not concerned you're going to forget to change the temperature. Okay, should you cover the knobs or the top? We could debate that point. But that takes care of that issue. But still, it looks like it's cooking. You're putting it on the flame. So what if there's a sheet of metal? So we'll extend under the because for if the issue is what he called just hadacha, where it's basically the only issue is that there's the appearance of cooking, but we're not concerned you can change the temperature. He thought under those circumstances, if you're stuck and and for some reason you don't have your non-adjustable hot plate and you have a non-Jew, then you could ask a non-Jew to put in a pinch and you want to have warm food. You would be allowed to tell. You would, yes, be allowed to tell a non-Jew to put the food on a blech on top of a flame.
But you can't tell them. You have to tell them not to put it over the flame.
You should tell them to put over. Yeah, you should tell them to put over the flame. Right.
But it's a direct request.
Yeah. All these things could be a direct request. Okay. Then we talked about this. Like we spoke about when it comes to workplace halachos. We mentioned about Beit Hashmashos. Right. We said that's what we saw the last chabur. We're not going to. Very simple. Sorry. This is in Siman Reish Samech Aleph Sif Aleph. The first 40 minutes after sunset is Beit Hashmashos. Okay. We're not going to go into the analysis. The first 40 minutes after sunset on Friday is Beit HaShemashos. So there, you would be allowed to tell a non-Jew to do a Melacha Doraisa, even to drive you for the first 40 minutes. Because there, it's Amir L'Nachri. Beit HaShemashos is only Drabanan. Right? So you could even tell him to do it. You could even tell him to do an Isser Doraisa, a Torah prohibition. Most of the things we're talking about here is you're telling a non-Jew to set aside a rabbinic prohibition on Shabbos. But Beit HaShemashos, between sunset and nightfall, during that time period, the first 40 minutes after sunset, that is categorized as a Shabbos time rabbinic Shabbos time, and therefore you would be allowed to tell a non-Jew, like you're stuck in the middle of the road, for the first 40 minutes, you know, to drive if need be. Obviously, we want to try to avoid that situation. Another example was the fridge door. So the non-Jew opened the fridge door. Let's say you open the fridge door, the light goes on. So nowadays, I think most of the lights are probably LED, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in any case, you're dealing with a rabbinic prohibition. But this is what's called, according to most poskim, this is what's called a psik reshe. Not everyone agrees to this, but many poskim hold that this is a psik reshe. What's a psik reshe? We talk about this, right? The cutting off the head of a chicken because you like to play with it. So your kids want to play with the chicken head, so they cut off the head. Well, yeah, a lot of creepy things, but that's what they used to do. Talmudic, we learned about what life was like in Talmudic times through the halachic sources. Okay, sound familiar, right? So anyway, they want to play with the chicken head, and so they indirectly killed the chicken. So that's called sikreshe velo yamos. You're going to cut off the head of the chicken, and it's not going to die. So what this means is you're not allowed to do something on Shabbos, even if your intent is not to do a malacha. You want something else, but inevitably, a malacha will be done. So, an example here that many hold, not everyone, many hold that when you open up the refrigerator door, so you want to get the food. You're not interested, your goal is not that the light should turn on. So even if the light would be an incandescent bulb, so you would still be allowed to, so you would not be allowed to do it, but a non-Jew, you're allowed to tell a non-Jew to open the refrigerator door, and that would be a psik ratio. So let's go through your case,
but
right?
Only during Shabbos.
No, even that's another permission. That's even during Shabbos itself. I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. I didn't sort of end the last piece. Until now, we started with things you're allowed to hint, and for those things that you're allowed to hint, you can get indirect or additional benefit. Now we're talking about things where you can tell the non-Jew directly. So one is, you're allowed to tell an non-Jew to set aside rabbinic prohibitions if there is some need. Okay. Now, there are even times you can tell a non-Jew to set aside a Torah prohibition even on Shabbos. Thank you for clarifying, asking the question. So an example is, psik reshe, even if there would be an incandescent light bulb, you would be allowed to tell the non-Jew to open the refrigerator door, even though that's an incandescent bulb and it would be an Isser Doraisa, Torah prohibition, but that's a psik reshe. That's
so once it's open, then you can have them remove the light?
Right, so then you could say, so removing the light is probably...
You can't remove the light bulb.
Right, so that's probably an indirect benefit.
Yeah, indirect benefit.
And then you would probably hint to the non-Jew.
Right.
Then you would hint to non-Jew to remove that as an indirect benefit.
So you're saying that you can ask the non-Jew directly
to open the fridge because you want to get the food.
Right.
You want to get the food.
But if you don't want to have them come back every time you want the fridge opened, right. Then you, once they it's want open, to open it, they could unscrew the light bulb.
Right. Right. So
hinting.
Yeah.
Right. They could do that. So the tape is a tape of Doraisa. So that's right. So could you tell the non-Jew to tape back on?
Yeah. Or some of them have magnets or something.
Yeah. That's, so you can't take that light bulb. You can't take the light bulb out of mine.
What?
You can't take the light bulb out.
Right, right, right.
It has to be taped.
Right. So the taping.
Mine has like a button, like Shabbos mode.
I don't have that.
So if you have the button. So that would be, that's probably an LED, or it's probably...
I have no idea what it is.
It's not incandescent. It's not incandescent.
No, only the balls you go like that are the incandescent.
Right. So that would be, you could even say directly, because you don't want your food to get spoiled, right? Right, so if you want more food for Shabbos, so that's probably a shvus to shvus for Makom Tzorach. So they can open the food, the door to get the food out, that's a psik reshe.
And then they could just press the button.
They could probably just press.
And I already have to hint.
Right, because that would be, if it's right before you have Shabbos.
They have to set up the Shabbos mode.
But if you don't have to hint, then you could just say, you have to hold it down for 3 seconds and it'll turn off, right?
You want to have food for Shabbos.
Yeah,
so that'd be shvus to shvus.
What about the tape?
Yes, I think the tape, now that would probably be, can we make that an indirect, it's probably like an indirect benefit, right? Because I'm not sure if the tape is a Doraisa or not. So I'm saying even if the tape's, I would probably hint, I'm going to just double check that, but
Can you even hint a Doraisa?
No, I don't know.
The only way the light is going to stay off is if the tape goes on.
Right, so the question. Right. So,
yeah, it's, you explain it, you're not telling
the tape is all right, so you can't even hint.
Right. What?
If the tape is all right, so you can't even hint.
No, you can. You could hint Doraisas.
Because it's an indirect.
It's an indirect benefit. It's an indirect benefit. Yeah, you could tape the. You could hint. I'm not sure if taping it. Not sure if taping it is a Doraisa. I have to think about that.
Why tape a
Doraisa? So I'm not sure. So that. So maybe if it's permanent. If it's permanent, then that might be.
Clearly not permanent.
Right. So it's probably not. Right. So it's probably. So it's probably not.
The
it's
tape is Doraisa, or the type of bulb determines whether or not.
No. She's talking about if you're taping the.
You tape the switch.
Right. So the tape is probably. See, it's I would think that the tape is probably not Doraisa because it's probably not gonna last more than 24 hours. It's probably not a very.
Right.
So it's probably not Doraisa. You probably would be allowed to say it directly, but because probably you could definitely hit because it's
like
a direct.
You should use a flashlight every day of the week.
Okay.
No.
So okay. Now. Let's say it's very cold, right? So it's very cold. You are allowed to tell a non-Jew to turn on the heat, or if it's too hot. It's very, very hot in the summer. The air conditioning dies. Right? We have a minhag in our house. Coming from Yangel, we have a minhag that whatever our air conditioning break, it always has to be Shabbos. So it's a minhag. Okay, it's a minhag. So the answer is. So there's halacha kol cholim etzel tzina. So everyone is considered a chola when it comes to cold, and a kol cholim etzel sheriff that if it's too hot, then you can also get sick. So there's a lot of latitude. You know, we can debate, and we have debated on how uncomfortable you have to be in the summer before you ask a non-Jew to come to fix it.
But also, isn't if the air conditioning, say, is on,
right,
then you can adjust it to stay on longer? Not us, but I mean somebody else. Because it's prolonging it. You're set it at 72.
Yeah, but when you press, well, it depends what kind of thermostat you have. If you're pressing buttons, then you're closing circuits when you're pressing buttons.
If you have the old manual.
Right, the old manual, right? You're allowed to preserve on Shabbos. You're allowed to preserve status quo. One way or the other, right. But again, sometimes I'm preserving status quo. If it's electric, you're pressing a button. But if you're closing a circuit on Shabbos, so it's an issue. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you could turn on the heat. You could have him turn on the heat for you. You could turn on the air conditioner for you on Shabbos if it's extremely uncomfortably hot. There are leniencies when it comes to that. Certainly, when it comes to if it's cold, you can have them. Turn on the heat. There's a halacha that we saw. This was in Shin Chav Ches Seif Yud Zayin that we define what a chola is. That someone who is bedridden or suffering so much their entire body is aching, and for that the Shulchan Aruch said you could have a non-Jew. Even set aside a Torah prohibition, and then we saw that we saw in Simon. Reish Ayin Vav Seif Hey, that in Be'artzos Karos, in cold, this is source 13, in cold lands, Mutar Leina Yehudi Lasus Madur Bishvil Katadim, you could make a fire for children. Generally we say that, and then Mutar Magdol Mischamim Bo, and the adults can try to benefit from it, Vafil Bishvil Gadolim Mutar Makor Gadol. It's very cold, even you can do it for the Gadolim, Shakol Cholim Eitzara Hakor, that everyone is considered a chola when it comes to the cold air. And then we also saw that the needs of a child, of course, how you define that, if a child needs something, there's a lot of leeway in terms of telling a non-Jew for the needs of a child because they're more susceptible to sickness. Some gray area of that, but that's also another category in terms of that. I would say if a pipe breaks on Shabbos, right? So we're going to see that there's an issue if a non-Jew comes to your house. It's Maris Ayin if a non-Jew is doing work in your house. right? So, however, if a pipe breaks, so and then you would be allowed to have him work on it based on this principle. So I was speaking to Rabbi Willig about this and said, well, let's say you could just go to another house. In other words, let's say your pipe breaks on Shabbos. So could you have a non-Jew come to your house? You have to find a way to call it. You can't violate a prohibition or to call him, but there are ways probably. But or let's say, for example, you call, you know, on Friday something breaks, and then and for the non-Jew to come on Shabbos to fix it. So normally they can't do anything. We'll see. We're talking about contractors. The one exception is if it's like, let's say it's a heat, the heat breaks. So you don't have to leave your house in order to avoid this prohibition. You would be allowed to get a non-Jew to come to fix the heat because of kochel beit tzitzida. Okay, that's one of the few exceptions to the prohibition of having a contractor fix something for you on Shabbos. Okay, so it's not based on a financial loss; it's based on this issue. A couple of other examples that we saw. This is right now in the third source sheet. A couple of other examples that we saw are the shvus. This we saw also in the workplace halacha topic, but we're revisiting it. Amira la amira. We saw this in Simon Shin Zayin Sif and the Mishnah Berurah Sif Katan Chavdal. It's the second source in the third source sheet, where he talks about if it's amira la amira and b'makom tzarach gadol. If there's a major need, you can tell one non-Jew to tell another non-Jew to violate a malacha. So the example I gave is, sending a, if they send something FedEx, a one-day delivery, you really shouldn't. But if, let's say you're working and you're going to get fired or it's part of your job, try to avoid as much as possible. But that's potentially, you can hang your hat on that because you're not telling the non-Jew to deliver the mail. You're calling someone on Friday and they're telling someone else. Again, it's normally not permitted, but there are some who are lenient, but makom hefsed gadol. So if it's potentially your job, you can lose your job. So that's called a mira la mira for a major need. These are things that you can do directly. And the last thing that we talked about that was mentioned here that you can set aside a Torah prohibition is if there's a public need or a mitzvah. So what was the example that we had here? We had, what was the example in the Eruv? The Eruv falls down. So I had this once where I asked Roberto to fix the Eruv on Shabbos while everyone was in shul. But that wasn't a major fix, but you're allowed to have a non-Jew fix the Eruv because that's a public need. The leniency for a non-Jew to turn on lights in shul is because there's a public need. My son had some of his friends over two Shabbos ago, and they wanted to learn in the shul Friday night. And so the point was, I told them that even if you can, they would open the door, they probably would not be allowed to turn on the light for you. Because the heter to turn on the light is for the tzibur, not for one or two people, not for a few people. It is a question, and maybe since I'm learning this topic, we should revisit this. I was told it's very difficult, but it's not ideal to rely on a non-Jew to constantly do things, even for the tzibur. Mm. It would be much preferable if somehow we could have all the lights. Right. You're on the executive board, okay? So okay, it would be.
Falls under
Benji's. All right, okay. It's not membership, okay? So it would certainly be. It's better to. I once spoke to someone who the show thought it was like very difficult to do that. If at all possible, it's better to set everything on a timer than to have a non-Jew, turn it on and off. Again, some shuls rely on this. We rely on this, but it's probably better to try to question how much money it is. But in the vacuum, it's better to try to avoid this if at all possible.
If you switch from incandescent to LED lights, you can afford to keep the lights on.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Let's say there's a scenario, we're talking about a two-day yontif, let's say, right, whatever. And you light a yahrzeit candle in like a two-day or a three-day, so it'll right, stay on so that right, you can light for the next right, day. What if it goes out?
Right. So on Yom Tov, yeah. So turning on a light, so turning on the flame on Yom Tov is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. So that's on Shabbos, that's an Issur D'Oraisa, but on Yom Tov, that is only an Issur, there's only a rabbinic prohibition. So that would be a Shvus to Shvus, but Makom Tzorech, so you'd be allowed to tell a non-Jew to turn the candle, like
to relight it,
because that Shabbos is more and Shabbos more problematic.
Can't you yourself go to your neighbor with
a
candle?
Yeah, but if you can, so it doesn't blow out. I'm saying that's just a practical. I'm saying if you need to, right? I'm saying if you could avoid it, it's much better. A lot of these questions are like, how much of a need? How far do you have to go to try to avoid it? But I assume. No, I assume. Like I'm saying, to go to a neighbor's house, I don't know how you get without it blowing out. But I'm saying so that's a very good example where again turning on right, on Yom Tov it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan to light a match and then so that'd be a shvus to shvus with makom tzorech, and so that would be permitted. So we're up to the second to last category. Hopefully I've covered a lot of topics. The contractor. So again, there's a difference between a schir yom and a kablan. A schir yom is a day worker. A kablan is a contractor. A contractor, I'm sure you saw this phrase in Siman Reish Mem Dalet Seif Aleph, that you can hire a non-Jew to do work and he does it by himself, and even does it on Shabbos permitted because of the concept in Mishnah Berurah Siman Reish Mem Dalet Seif Katan Beis Kevan Dekatzas Adaitei Denafshei Ka'avid. He does it on his own accord on Shabbos. As long as he has the opportunity to do it during the week, and he does it on Shabbos, it is permitted, as long as he doesn't do it in your house, because if he does it in your house, then it's Mar Zayin, even for a contractor. Even for a contractor. Because the truth is, that let's say you have a plumber come to your house, and you know, but why do they come to your house now? So probably you wanted it dafka on Shabbos. Or you wanted the problem is there is a Maris Ayin issue if they do it in your house. So therefore, the classic example is the car mechanic, right? If you give the car to the car mechanic, and say, you know, you give it on Friday. So if you give it Friday 2 minutes before Shabbos and you say you want it 2 minutes after Shabbos, so that would be no good. If you give it on Friday and you say you want it first thing Monday morning and they're not open on Sunday, but they can choose that if they want to work on Sunday, they can, then that's totally fine. Because again, he's a contractor and he's doing it off your premises. Okay? If there is a, generally speaking, if a I didn't bring you sources for this, but generally speaking, if a contractor comes to your house, and you tell him not to, I didn't tell you to come, and if there's a substantial expense, then there might be heterim to let him continue doing the work. But you should try to, if there's a substantial expense, you should try to shoo him away. Whether it's tell
the
gardener
who comes on the wrong day.
No, but then they're not going to charge you again. They're,
no, but he shouldn't be there.
He shouldn't be there. No, you should shoot them away.
So you shoo him away.
You try to shoo him away. That's what you get.
In the middle of lunch, the exterminator.
So you should shoo them away. That's the hard thing. We have to try to remember by on Yom Tov when it comes up. I forgot at times. So remember, I always remember. I still have these memories of like resting. Get the sukkah, and all of a sudden, I hear zzz, and I'm like, okay, so it happens. We have to remember before Yom Tov to tell the gardeners not to.
They showed up once. Though,
yeah.
Man,
okay. Okay.
What about a financial loss from the idea that the longer that the work takes,
what's an example?
Well, like,
in your house,
like when we were out of our house and we were paying rent to live in another house,
yeah,
and then you push it off, you know, whatever it is,
yeah. It's not really.
You lose your contractor to other jobs when you.
To tell them not to work on Shabbos?
Yeah. Once you give them up for a day.
For a day or two?
They took another job and then they didn't come back for a month instead of for a week and a half. Just like this.
Yeah, I don't know how to get around that. I don't know how to get around that.
But what about if you're paying for every day that you're in your house?
What if you're not living in your house, wouldn't it be the same situation?
No, that's I'm saying it, but you can't. I'm saying the.
Well, I'm not understanding what the significant financial loss is then.
Well, I'm saying if he already came to the house, and then he would. If he already came to the house, but lechatchila, you can't do that. L'chadchila, you're not supposed to do
that. Well, what if you're just, you pay for the job and you don't tell him when to come and when not to come?
No, you should, no, but my point is you should, no, but you're supposed to tell him,
don't come.
You're supposed to tell him not to come. You're really not, you're really supposed to tell him not to come. If they come and you tell him not to come, so then, and he's going to charge a fee. These things are very gray in terms of that. There are, you're really not supposed to, l'chadchila. That's the way it is. You can't, Chol HaMoed you can come, but Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed need to be
invited.
But ideally, you should come Chol HaMoed. I'm saying if there's a major financial loss, I'm saying you have you may have room to play with Chol HaMoed.
Okay, okay.
You may have room to play with. Yes. But by Yom Tov, you really have no room to play with.
But you wouldn't have even known if he came because you weren't living in the house.
I mean,
but it's on premises.
Shabbos never came Shabbos. I mean, I really came up more with like Yom Tov for Chol HaMoed, but right. I'm curious because it is. I mean, right. Like, you know, if you're paying by the month, you, right. The days all add up.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just curious.
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. Okay, so the last thing is
what happens if you have a housekeeper, and the housekeeper is your regular? She's always in. She works 6 days a week, and Shabbos is like another day to her. I mean, we're not talking about vacuuming or anything like that. So she's not considered like the contractor because she is like on a steady.
You're paying her by the day.
Basis.
You're paying her by the
day.
By
the week.
Yeah, but you're paying her every day. In other words, you're paying by the week. But I'm saying you're not paying her to do a job. You're paying her to. I mean, is she obligated to?
No,
I'm saying you're giving me the fact pattern. So I'm saying, is she obligated to work for you on Shabbos? Okay, so that's not a job. That's based on that's called the Schir Yom. She's a day laborer. I mean, this is not like you can be hired someone for a week, 2 weeks, a month. Mm-hmm. They're
so
a day laborer.
People have people work for them on Shabbos.
Yeah, but so you could have, but you can't do malacha.
So if you can pay them to work for you.
Let me explain. So you could tell them to wash the dishes. If they choose to use hot water, that's up to them.
Yeah.
You could use
a regular sponge.
That's up to them. Right.
Well, as long as the dishwasher.
Right. So the dishwasher runs another problem, which is it makes noise and it's called avshe milsa. So the truth is that you probably are allowed to. The truth is, the truth is some air conditioning units are noisier than dishwashers, and yet we seem to be more lenient when it comes to air conditioners than we are dishwashers.
So that's
helpful. Yeah. So could be the issue. What?
Meaning dishwashers, but that's different on Yom Tov, or it's the same.
Okay, so first of all, you probably could tell a non-Jew to wash your dishes, and if they use the dishwasher, if they run the dishwasher at night when no one's around, then that's probably okay. That's probably okay. If they run the dishwasher when no one's around, I had this conversation with William about this. So he felt that if an audience is running the dishwasher while everyone's around, so that's Abshe Milsa. That's sort of not. Some say that's not in the spirit of Shabbos because it makes noise, or people think that it's electric, it's a machine that you may have turned it on Shabbos even though the non-Jew's there. It's a question. Once it gets so noiseless, it's hard to know. These are very good questions. What's considered too much noise and too little noise? Why are dishwashers a problem and air conditioners not a problem? But wait one second. So the dishwasher would be if it's done at night and the non-Jew does it by himself and no one's around, so then that might not be a problem because there's no Baris Ayin issue and there's no what's called Avshe Milsa if no one's around. And just as an example, I mean, I had this, I spoke about this Friday night, this past Friday night. I talked about these robotic vacuums. So I spoke to William about this. So he said they never heard of it before. So I explained to him what it was. And he said you could set it before Shabbos, but so that it cleans it in the middle of the night.
So
So again, because that's noiseless, that's like noiseless. But I'm saying, so that's sort of like the dishwasher, but it'd be in the middle of the night. Yes.
So then, according to that, if like you could set a Shabbos clock for a light, could you theoretically do that for a dishwasher also for the middle of the night?
So the problem with that, you could, but it would be illegal. Why would it be illegal? Because you would have to set up your dishwasher. Okay, I'm sorry. Let me just take a step back. The problem is that when you close the dishwasher door, you are doing what's called grab havara. If you don't close the dishwasher door, then even if you set it on a timer, the dishwasher won't go on at night.
But it also benefits you.
No, what does it mean? When you close, when you put the dishes in the dishwasher Friday night, so then you close the door. You're clicking it. Without you doing that, then it's not going to. If you leave it open,
it won't work.
Right. So you could illegally change the mechanics on your dishwasher so that it will go on even if the door is open. It's dangerous and it's illegal. So what you're doing is that's called grab havara. When you close the dishwasher door, you're indirectly causing it to circus to close at some point in the future. On Yom Tov, that would be permitted. On Yom Tov, you'd be allowed to set the timer before Yom Tov to go on Yom Tov, because when you close it at nighttime, so go to night when people are asleep, because when you're closing it, that's Gram Havara, and Gram Havara is permitted on Yom Tov. But I'm not wholly responsible for that because you didn't learn it in the sources.
Wait, it has to be specifically at nighttime. What if like everybody goes to shul for the whole morning? No one's home except the babysitter. You can't be like just no one's around. What about nighttime?
I don't know the answer to that question. When I've been speaking,
it's very complicated.
I know that when I've spoken to Willie about it, he said it has to be at night when there's no possibility of people there. So questions that fit into that. I don't
feel like there's a greater possibility of someone being there at night than when everybody's at shul.
I think they mean at 2
o'clock. I think it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm saying like late at night when people are sleeping, there's no possibility. I hear what you're saying. But I'm saying that's not, like for example, he changed his view on this a little bit when I spoke about, like, again, I don't think you have to do this because you don't need to water your lawn, you know, every night. If you do it 3 times a week, I try to not have it on Shabbos or Yom Tov. But technically speaking, if it's the middle of the night, then it's probably not a Maris side issue, even for your the sprinkler.
Up in the morning, your lawn looks like
no, because it's only the act. It's when that act is taking place.
No one knows how it comes.
It's
Shabbos?
Again, I don't do that.
You can have your water.
In the middle of the night. You set it up.
Mayor doesn't let you drink a glass of water over the grass.
No, but that's different. No, it's different. Wait, let me make it clear. If you're drinking the water, then the water goes on the grass. So you're doing an act on Shabbos. Can you set it up beforehand so it goes on, so the water goes on Shabbos itself? Yeah. That's very different. Let me finish. So I think laundry would probably be similar to a dishwasher, probably. Yeah, even though it's noiseless, I think that's probably similar to that. Okay. Now the.
I'm sorry. I have another question about the dishwasher.
Yeah.
If they run the dishwasher.
Yeah.
And then you want to use, you can't use those dishes then on Shabbos. Right. How's that not a direct benefit?
How is it a direct benefit? Okay, wait. If you told a non-Jew to wash the dishes, and they wash the dishes, and you told them that, and you to wash the dishes, make sure they're clean, and they wash it in hot water, which many instances they do that. How are you allowed to use those dishes?
Like asking them to look for your jewelry.
No.
I understand why it benefits them the way they wash it.
That is all you
the dishes themselves afterwards.
No, but all you want is, you said to them, I want the dishes clean. They could wash it in cold water. They chose to wash it in hot water for their own benefit. But they, you know, if it's impossible for them to do it in a if it's possible for them to do it in a permitted way, so then it's no good. But they could wash the dishes in cold water. They're washing it in hot water. Most instances, they're washing it in hot water. Okay, so how is that benefit?
The same. There's no way you can do laundry where it's permitted
on water. Right. So laundry wouldn't be right. So laundry you probably wouldn't be able to. Right.
But also, I, you're saying that you yourself, not for the guy, can
Right. There's a laundry probably not. Yes, laundry probably not. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
You're saying the dishwasher, you yourself can set for yourself?
So for Yom Tov. For Yom Tov. Before Yom Tov. Wait, let me make this clear. Okay, let me make this clear. I thought it was clear, but I thought it was clear that, that on Erev Shabbos you would not be on Erev Shabbos you would not be allowed to set your dishwasher to go off in the middle to operate in the middle of the night, because when you close the dishwasher door, that's called grab havara. You're indirectly.
What about the hot water situation?
No, but you're not doing anything on Shabbos itself. You're just setting it before Shabbos. All you're doing, you're closing the dishwasher door. That you can't do on Shabbos. But on Yom Tov, unless you hot wire, which is illegal and dangerous. Okay. Now on Yom Tov, you would be allowed to set it as a timer for it to go off in the middle of the night. And even when you're closing the door, that's grab havara, because your action of closing the dishwasher door, you're directly causing the circuits to close at some point in the future. So that's permitted on Yom Tov. Okay.
Hot water is not an issue.
Without what hot water? You're not doing anything at this point. You're causing there to be hot water in the future, and that is forbidden on Shabbos. That's permitted on Yom Tov. Let me finish with the. I've gone overboard. But
Okay.
Let me finish. Last thing, mail and packages. We can drop. Okay. So if you drop a letter, you can drop a letter to the mailbox on Friday. The non-Jew is doing his job in collecting the letter on Shabbos. Okay, so it's not a Amir Ladachri. We spoke about the idea of express mail, and basically. Basically, Amazon is probably okay. Why is Amazon? Is because even if the 2-day delivery, because they sometimes come on one day. So whether, you know, if it comes on 2 days, let's say you're ordering on Thursday, they'll sometimes come on Friday. They can if they want. So if they want to send it on Shabbos, they would come. Yeah. They come. Okay.
Can you order it on
what?
Can you order it on
Friday? Yeah, because it's coming. It's two days. It might come on Sunday. So you could derive benefit. I don't think whether you need it or not is not an issue.
It's
if you specific
things, or it's never.
If you no, whether you need on what?
Certain things, if you need them on Shabbos itself, you're not allowed to do it.
If you need something on 1 day delivery, so that might be more of an issue. For 1 day delivery, it has to come on Shabbos.
If it's 2 day delivery and you don't have any more diapers.
If it's 2 day delivery, if something comes on Shabbos, so you can. I know it's a broader topic, but right. Something comes on Shabbos, you could if it's clothes that you don't have any clothes, you can wear those clothes.
You should order it on Thursday to get it on Shabbos and just be like, I'm not going to the store on Friday for diapers. I'll use them when they come on Shabbos.
I mean, they might come on Friday also.
What about
me? I mean, it may not be a good idea, like in the spirit of Shabbos, maybe, but I'm saying from a halachic. Okay, it sounds. Okay, I don't know that diaper issue, but I'm saying. No, listen.
Responsible diaper
practice. So both
for the 1 day and the 1 day. No, so I'm saying for 1 day, if you say it has to come on Shabbos, so that's more problematic. It might not be, in Oceanside, it might not be problematic for another reason, for 1 day delivery, because when you're ordering something, so here's the question, when they're delivering it, are they delivering it with a lot of other packages? So if they're delivering it mostly to non-Jews, so then there might be heterim, but it's best to avoid the 1 day delivery. It's best to avoid the 1 day delivery.
What about medication that you had delivered that you didn't want to come on Shabbat? They came on Shabbat. That's going to be used for after Shabbat.
Yeah. So what? What's your question?
Well,
you're not benefiting from it on Shabbos.
No.
Right. So that's not an issue.
Okay.
But what if it's medicine that you did need for Shabbos?
It's medicine, so that's great. That's you can because it's Amir Ladachri is permitted for cholin. Yeah.
But if you got medicine that wasn't supposed to be delivered on Shabbos, but then when it was, it had to be refrigerated.
Yeah.
So you need this medication.
You didn't need it. You had, but if you left it not, if you didn't refrigerate perishable. It immediately, it was perishable. So you could put that. You could open that.
Yeah. So you need the medication. You say you don't need it on Shabbos.
You didn't need it, and you didn't expect it to come. This happened. We didn't expect it to come on Shabbos, but it came, and it was something that was perishable. It had to be put in the refrigerator.
Right.
It was in those freezer things, but then they were.
Right. So the medication.
And the financial loss.
So the only question I have is probably okay. Could you possibly benefit from it on Shabbos? In other words, is it something that you're not going to use on Shabbos at all? Does that make it?
Well, you don't need it.
Can you benefit from it in the sense that it will stress you out not to put it in the fridge?
Oh, I don't know if that's...
Open it up and take what you need from it on Shabbos because it got delivered on Shabbos.
So the question is that muksa, is medication that you're not going to use on Shabbos considered muksa? Not sure. I don't know what to think about that.
A package comes on Shabbos, you're allowed to bring it in today.
I understand. Well, that's a muksa question.
Right. Mm.
So the question is medication that you're not going to use on Shabbos, is that muksa or not? That's what I'm not sure about.
And that would be
all right. Compared to any other thing that gets delivered
on Shabbos. If you have clothing, no. Here's the thing. If you have clothing, right? So clothing, that's a klisha block to the heter. You can move that directly on Shabbos. Here, you're actually taking because you want to save it. Uh-huh. So you certainly could do it. You certainly could do it in an indirect manner. You certainly can
kick it.
You can kick whatever. You could do it in an indirect manner. That's sort of the question. Can you take it directly? And I wonder whether something.
I'm not asking that. When you see it comes to your house and it's perishable, it has to be opened and put in the refrigerator.
I understand. How do you do that indirectly?
Why is it perishable? It's being sent to you. It's always being sent with refrigeration.
Right.
So it's a 24-hour period. It should be able to.
But it was already not cold anymore.